He refused to think of why. The mating bond remained, stretched taut, but it remained. So he sent the words along it, with as much hope and fury and unrelenting love as he had felt from her. I will find you. There was no answer. Nothing but humming darkness and the Lord of the North glistening above, pointing the way north. To her. He found his companions waiting for his orders. He opened his mouth to voice them, but halted. Considered. We need to draw Maeve out. Away from Aelin. His voice rumbled over the drowsy buzzing of insects in the grasses. Just long enough for us to infiltrate Doranell. For even with the three of them together, they might not be enough to take on Maeve. If she hears we're coming, Lorcan countered. Maeve will spirit Aelin away again, not come to meet us. She's not that foolish. But Rowan looked to Elide, the Lady of Perrant's eyes wide. I know, he said, his plan forming, as cold and ruthless as the power in his veins. We'll draw out Maeve, with a different sort of lure then. Chapter 13. The spider spoke true. Keeping hidden amongst the ice-crusted rocks of a jagged mountain peak, Manon and the 13 peered down into the small pass. At the camp of red-cloaked witches, the location confirmed by the shadows just an hour ago. Manon glanced over her shoulder to where Dorian was nearly invisible against the snow. The spider in her plain human form beside him. The depthless eyes of the creature met hers, shining with triumph. Fine. Cyrene, or whatever she called herself, might live. Where it would lead them, she'd see. The horrors the spider had mentioned in Morath. Later. Manon scanned the darkening blue skies. None of them had questioned when Manon had sailed off on Abraxos hours earlier. And none of her 13 now asked where she'd gone, as they monitored their ancient enemy's camp. 75 that we can see, Asterin murmured, eyes fixed on the bustling camp. What in hell are they doing out here? Manon didn't know. The shadows hadn't been able to glean anything. Tents surrounded small campfires, and every few moments figures departed and arrived on brooms. Her heart thundered in her chest. The Crokins, the other half of her heritage. We move on your command, Sorrel said. A careful nudge. Manon drew in a breath, willing the snow-laced wind to keep her cold and steady during this next encounter, and what would come after. No nails or teeth, Manon ordered the 13. She looked over her shoulder once more to the king and spider. You may stay here, if you wish. Dorian gave her a lazy smile. And miss the fun? Yet she caught the gleam in his eye, the understanding that perhaps he alone could grasp. That she was not just about to face an enemy, but a potential people. He subtly nodded. We all go in. Manon merely nodded back and rose. The 13 stood with her. It was the matter of a few minutes before warning cries rang out. But Manon kept her hands in the air as Abraxos landed at the edge of the Crokin camp, the 13 in their wyverns behind her, Vesta bearing both Dorian and the spider. Spears and arrows and swords pointed at them with lethal accuracy. A dark-haired witch stalked past the armed front line, a fine blade in her hand as her eyes fixed on Manon. Crokins. Her people. Now. Now would be the time to make the speech she'd planned. To free those words that she'd tethered within herself. Asterin turned toward her in silent urging. Yet Manon's lips didn't move. The dark-haired one kept her brown eyes fixed on Manon. Over one shoulder, a polished wood staff gleamed. Not a staff, a broom. Beyond the witch's billowing red cloak, gold-bound twigs shimmered. High-ranking, then, to have such fine bindings. Most Krakens used simpler metals, the poorest just twine. "What interesting replacements for your ironwood brooms," the Kraken said. The others were as stone-faced as the 13. The witch glanced toward where Dorian sat atop Vesta's mount, likely monitoring all that with clear-eyed cunning. "An interesting company you now keep." The witch's mouth curled slightly. "Unless things have become so sorry for your ilk, Blackbeak, that you have to resort to sharing." A snarl rumbled from Asterin. But the witch had identified her, or at least what clan they hailed from. The Kraken sniffed at the spider shifter. Her eyes shuddered. "Interesting company, indeed." "We mean you no harm," Manon finally said. The witch snorted. "No threats from the white demon." Oh, she knew then. Who Manon was. Who they all were. "Or are the rumors true? That you broke with your grandmother?" The witch brazenly surveyed Manon from head to boot. A bolder look than Manon usually allowed her enemies to make. "Rumor also claims you were gutted at her hand. But here you are. Hail and once more hunting us. Perhaps the rumors about your defection aren't true either." "She broke from her grandmother," said Dorian, sliding off Vesta's wyvern and prowling toward Abraxos. The Krakens tensed, but made no move to attack. "I pulled her from the sea months ago when she lay upon death's doorstep. Saw the iron shards my friend removed from her abdomen." The Kraken's dark brows rose, again taking in the beautiful, well-spoken male, perhaps noting the power that radiated from him and the keys he bore. "And who exactly are you?" Dorian gave the witch one of those charming smiles and sketched a bow. "Dorian Havilliard, at your service."
"The king," one of the Krakens murmured from near the wyverns.
Dorian winked.
"That I am, too."
The head of the coven, however, studied him. Then Manon, the spider.
"There is more to be explained, it seems."
Manon's hand itched for Windcleaver at her back. But Dorian said, "We've been looking for you for 2 months now." The Krakens again tensed. "Not for violence or sport," he clarified, the words flowing in a silver-tongued melody, "but so we might discuss matters between our peoples." The Krakens shifted, boots crunching in the icy snow. The coven leader asked, "Between Otterlin and us? Or between the Blackbeaks and our people?" Manon slid off Abraxos at last, her mount huffing anxiously as he eyed their glinting weapons.
"All of us," Manon said tightly.
She jerked her chin to the wyverns. "They will not harm you." Unless she signaled the command. Then the Kraken's heads would be torn from their bodies before they could draw their swords.
"You can stand down."
One of the Krakens laughed.
"And be remembered as fools for trusting you? I think not."
The coven leader slashed a silencing glare toward the brown-haired sentinel who'd spoken. A pretty, full-figured witch. The witch only shrugged, sighing skyward. The coven leader turned to Manon.
"We will stand down when we are ordered to do so."
"By whom?"
Dorian scanned their ranks. Now would be the time for Manon to say who she was, what she was, to announce why she had truly come. The coven leader pointed deeper into the camp. "Her." Even from a distance, Dorian had marveled at the brooms the Krakens sat astride to soar through the sky. But now surrounded by them? No mere myths, but warriors. Ones all too happy to end them. Blood-red capes flowed everywhere, stark against the snow and gray peaks. Though many of the witches were young-faced and beautiful, there were just as many who appeared middle-aged, some even elderly. How old they must have been to become so withered, Dorian couldn't fathom. He had little doubt they could kill him with ease.
The coven leader pointed toward the neat rows of tents, and the gathered warriors parted, the wall of brooms and weapons glinting in the dying light.
So,
an ancient voice said, as the ranks stepped back to reveal the one to whom the Kraken had pointed. Not yet bent with age, but her hair was white with it. Her blue eyes, however, were clear as a mountain lake.
The hunters have now become the hunted.
The ancient witch paused at the edge of her ranks, surveying Manon. There was kindness on the witch's face, Dorian noted, and wisdom. And something he realized like sorrow. It didn't halt him from sliding a hand onto Damaris's pommel, as if he were casually resting it.
We sought you so we might speak.
Manon's cold, calm voice rang out over the rocks. We mean you no harm. Damaris warmed at the truth in her words.
This time,
the brown-haired witch who'd spoken earlier muttered. Her coven leader elbowed her in warning.
Who are you, though?
Manon instead asked the crone.
You lead these covens. I am Glenis. My family served the Kraken royals long before the city fell.
The ancient witch's eyes went to the strip of red cloth tying Manon's braid.
Rhiannon found you, then?
Dorian had listened when Manon had explained to the 13 the truth about her heritage, and who her grandmother had bade her to slaughter in the Omega. Manon kept her chin up, even as her golden eyes flickered.
Rhiannon didn't make it out of the Farian Gap.
Bitch,
a witch snarled, others echoing it. Manon ignored it and asked the ancient Kraken,
You knew her then?
The witches fell silent. The crone inclined her head, that sorrow filling her eyes once more. Dorian didn't need Damaris's confirming warmth to know her next words were true.
I was her great-grandmother.
Even the whipping wind quieted.
As I am yours.
Chapter 14. The Kraken stood down, under the orders of Manon's so-called great-grandmother, Glenis. She had demanded how, what the lineage was, but Glenis had only beckoned Manon to follow her into the camp. At least 24 other witches tended to the several fire pits scattered amongst the white tents, all of them halting their various work as Manon passed. She'd never seen Krakens going about their domestic tasks, but here they were. Some tending to fires, some hauling buckets of water, some monitoring heavy cauldrons of what smelled like mountain goat stew seasoned with dried herbs. No words sounded in her head while she strode through the ranks of bristling Krakens. The 13 didn't try to speak either, but Dorian did. The king fell into step beside her, his body a wall of solid warmth, and asked quietly,
Did you know you had kin still living amongst the Krakens?
No.
Her grandmother hadn't mentioned it in her final taunts. Manon doubted the camp was a permanent place for the Krakens. They'd be foolish to ever reveal that.
Yet Cyrene had discovered it somehow.
Perhaps by tracking Manon's scent, the parts of it that claimed kinship with the Krakens. The spider now walked between Asterin and Sorrel, Dorian still showing no sign of strain in keeping her partially bound, though he kept a hand on the hilt of his sword. A sharp glance from Manon, and he dropped it.
How do you want to play this?
Dorian murmured.
Do you want me to keep quiet, or be at your side?
Asterin is my second.
And what am I then?
The smooth question ran a hand down her spine, as if he'd caressed her with those invisible hands of his.
You are the king of Otterlin. Shall I be part of the discussions, then?
If you feel like it. She felt his rising annoyance and hid her smirk. Dorian's voice dropped into a low purr.
Do you know what I feel like doing?
She twisted her head to glare at him incredulously, and found the king smirking.
You look like you're about to bolt,
he said, that smile lingering.
It will set the wrong tone.
He was trying to rile her, to distract her into loosening her iron-hard grip on her control.
They know who you are, Dorian went on. Proving that part of it is over. Whether they accept you will be the true matter.
Her great-grandmother must have come from the non-royal part of her bloodline, then.
These do not seem like witches who will be won by brutality.
He didn't know the half of it.
Are you presuming to give me advice?
Consider it a tip, from one monarch to another.
Despite who walked ahead of them, behind them,
Manon smiled slightly.
He surprised her further by saying,
I've been tunneling into my power since they appeared. One wrong move from them, and I'll blast them into nothing.
A shiver rippled down her back at the cold violence in his voice. We need them as allies. Everything she was to do today, tonight, was to seal such a thing.
Then let's hope it doesn't come to that, witchling.
Manon opened her mouth to answer. But a horn, shrill and warning, blasted through the descending night. Then the beating of mighty leathery wings boomed across the stars. The camp was instantly in action, shouts ringing out from the scouts who'd sounded the alarm. The 13 closed ranks around Manon, weapons drawn. The Iron Teeth had found them. Far sooner than Manon had planned. How the Iron Teeth patrol had found them, Dorian didn't know. He supposed the fires would be a giveaway. Dorian rallied his magic as 26 massive shapes swept over the camp. Yellowlegs, two covens. The crone who'd introduced herself as Manon's great-grandmother began shouting commands, and Crokins obeyed, leaping into the newly dark skies on their brooms, bows drawn or swords out. No time to question how they'd been found, whether the spider had indeed laid a trap. Certainly not as Manon's voice rang out, ordering the 13 into defensive positions. Swift as shadows, they raced for where they'd left their wyverns, Iron Teeth glinting. Dorian waited until the Crokins were clear of him before unleashing his power. Spears of ice, to pierce the enemy's exposed chests or rip through their wings. Half a thought had him loosening Cyrene's bonds, though not unleashing her from the power that kept her from attacking. Just giving her enough space to shift, to defend herself. A flash on the other side of the camp told him she had. The interrogation would come later. Manon and the 13 reached the wyverns and were airborne within heartbeats, flapping into the chaos above. The Crokins were so small, so terribly small against the bulk of the wyverns, even on their brooms. And as they swarmed around the two Iron Teeth covens, firing arrows and swinging swords, Dorian couldn't get a clear shot. Not with the Crokins darting around the beasts, too fast for him to track. Some of the wyverns bellowed and tumbled from the sky, but many stayed aloft. Glenys barked orders from the ground, a great bow in her wrinkled hands, aimed upward. A wyvern soared overhead, so low its spiked poisonous tail snapped through tent after tent. Glenys let her arrow fly, and Dorian echoed her blow with one of his own. A lance of solid ice, careening for the exposed, mottled chest. Both arrow and ice spear drove home, and black blood spewed downward before the wyvern and rider went crashing into a peak and flipped over the cliff face. Glenys grinned, that aged face lighting. I struck first. She drew another arrow. Such lightness, even in the face of an ambush. I wish you were my great-grandmother, Dorian muttered, and readied his next blow. He'd have to be careful, with the 13 looking so much like the yellow legs from below. But the 13 did not need his caution, or his help. They plowed into the lines of the yellow legs, breaking them apart, scattering them. The yellow legs might have had the advantage of surprise, but the 13 were masters of war. Crokins tumbled from the skies as they were struck by brutal spiked tails, some not even tumbling at all, as they came face to face with enormous maws and did not emerge again. Clear out! Manon's barked order carried over the fray. Form lines low to the ground! Not an order for the 13, but the Crokins. Glenys shouted, some magic no doubt amplifying her voice. Follow her command! Just like that, The Krokans fell back, forming a solid unit in the air above the tents. They watched as Abraxos ripped the throat from a bull twice his size, and Manon fired an arrow through the rider's face. Watched as the green-eyed demon twins rounded up three wyverns between them and sent them crashing onto the mountainsides. Watched as Asterin's blue mare ripped a rider from the saddle, then ripped part of the spine from the wyvern beneath her. Each of the 13 marked a target with every swipe through the gathered attackers. The Yellowlegs had no such organization. The Yellowleg sentinels, who tried to break from the 13th's path to attack the Krokans below, found a wall of arrows meeting them. The wyverns might have survived, but the riders did not. And with a few careful maneuvers, the riderless beasts found themselves with throats cut, blood streaming as they crashed onto the nearby peaks. Pity mingled with the fear and rage in his heart. How many of those beasts might have been like Abraxos, had they good riders who loved them? It was surprisingly hard to blast his magic at the wyvern who managed to sail overhead, aiming right for Glenis, another wyvern on its tail. He made it an easy death, snapping the beast's neck with a burst of his power that left him panting. He whipped his magic toward the second attacking wyvern, offering it the same quick end, but didn't see the third and fourth that now crashed into the camp, wrecking tents and snapping their jaws at anything in their path. Krokans fell, screaming. But then Manon was there, Abraxos sailing hard and fast, and she lopped off the head of the nearest rider. The Yellowleg sentinel still wore an expression of shock as her head flew. Dorian's magic balked. The severed head hit the ground near him and rolled. A room flashed, the red marble stained with blood, the thud of a head on stone the only sound beyond his screaming.
I was not supposed to love you.
The Yellowleg's head halted near his boots, the blue blood gushing onto the snow and dirt. He didn't hear, didn't care that the fourth wyvern soared toward him. Manon bellowed his name, and Krokan arrows fired. The Yellowleg sentinel's eyes stared at no one, nothing. A gaping maw opened before him, jaws stretching wide. Manon screamed his name again, but he couldn't move. The wyvern swept down, and darkness yawned wide as those jaws closed around him. As Dorian let his magic rip free of its tethers, one heartbeat, the wyvern was swallowing him whole, its rancid breath staining the air. The next, the beast was on the ground, corpse steaming. Steaming from what he'd done to it. Not to it, but to himself. The body he'd turned into solid flame, so hot it had melted through the wyvern's jaws, its throat, and he had passed through the beast's mouth as if it were nothing but a cobweb. The Yellowleg's rider who'd survived the crash drew her sword, but too late. Glenis put an arrow through her throat. Silence fell. Even the battle above died out. The 13 landed, splattered in blue and black blood. So different from Sorsha's red blood. His own red blood. Then there were iron-tipped hands gripping his shoulders, and gold eyes glaring into his own.
Are you daft?
He only glanced to the Yellowleg's witch's head, still feet away. Manon's own gaze turned toward it. Her mouth tightened. Then she let go of him and whirled to Glenis. I'm sending out my shadows to scout for others.
Any enemy survivors?
Glenis scanned the empty skies. Whether his magic surprised them, shocked them, neither Glenis nor the Krokans rushing to tend to their wounded let on.
All dead, Manon said.
But the dark-haired Krokan who'd first intercepted them stormed at Manon, her sword out.
You did this!
Dorian gripped Damaris, but made no move to draw it. Not while Manon didn't back down.
Saved your asses? Yes, I'd say we did.
The witch seethed.
You led them here!
Bronwyn,
Glenis warned, wiping blue blood from her face. The young witch, Bronwyn, bristled.
You think it mere coincidence that they arrive and then we're attacked?
They fought with us, not against us, Glenis said.
She turned to Manon.
Do you swear it?
Manon's golden eyes glowed in the firelight.
I swear it. I did not lead them here.
Glennis nodded, but Dorian stared at Manon. Damaris had gone cold as ice, so cold the golden hilt bit into his skin. Glennis, somehow satisfied, nodded again.
Then we shall talk. Later.
Bronwyn spat on the bloody ground and prowled off. A lie. Manon had lied. She arched a brow at him, but Dorian turned away, letting the knowledge settle into him, what she'd done. Thus began a series of orders and movements, gathering the injured and dead. Dorian helped as best he could, healing those who needed it most. Open, gaping wounds that leaked blue blood onto his hands. The warmth of that blood didn't reach him.
Chapter 15. She was a liar and a killer, and would likely have to be both again before this was through. But Manon had no regrets about what she'd done, had no room in her for regret. Not with time bearing down on them, not with so much resting on their shoulders. For long hours, while they worked to repair camp and Crokins, Manon monitored the frosty skies. 8 dead. It could have been worse. Much worse. Though she would take the lives of those 8 Crokins with her, learn their names so she might remember them. Manon spent the long night helping the 13 haul the fallen Wyverns and Iron Teeth Riders to another ridge. The ground was too hard to bury them, and pyres would be too easily marked. So they opted for snow. She didn't dare ask Dorian to use his power to assist them. She'd seen that look in his eyes, like he knew. Manon dumped a stiff Yellowleg's body, the sentinel's lips already blue, ice crusted in her blonde hair. Astarin hauled a stout-bodied rider toward her by the boots, then deposited the witch with little fanfare. But Manon stared at their dead faces. She'd sacrificed them, too. Both sides of this conflict. Both of her bloodlines. All would bleed. Too many would die. Would Glennis have welcomed them? Perhaps. But the other Crokins hadn't seemed so inclined to do so. And the fact remained that they did not have the time to waste in wooing them. So she'd picked the only method she knew. Battle. Had soared off on her own earlier that day, to where she knew Iron Teeth would be patrolling nearby, waiting until the great northern wind carried her scent southward, and then bided her time.
Did you know them?
Astarin asked, when Manon remained staring at a fallen sentinel's body. Down the line of them, the Wyverns used their wings to brush great drifts of snow over the corpses.
No,
Manon said.
I didn't.
Dawn was breaking by the time they returned to the Kraken camp. Eyes that had spat fire hours earlier now watched them warily, fewer hands drifting toward weapons as they aimed for the large ringed fire pit, the largest of the camp and located in its heart, Glennis's hearth. The crone stood before it, warming her gnarled, bloodied hands. Dorian sat nearby, and his sapphire eyes were indeed damning as he met Manon's stare. Later. That conversation would come later. Manon halted a few feet away from Glennis, the 13 falling into rank at the outskirts of the fire, surveying the 5 tents around it, the cauldron bubbling at its center. Behind them, Crokins continued their repairs and healing, and kept one eye upon them all.
Eat something,
Glennis said, gesturing to the bubbling cauldron, to what smelled like goat stew. Manon didn't bother objecting before she obeyed. Gathering one of the small earthenware bowls beside the fire, another way to demonstrate trust, to eat their food, accept it. So Manon did, devouring a few bites before Dorian followed her lead and did the same. When they were both eating, Glennis sat on a stone and sighed.
It's been over 500 years since an Iron Teeth witch and a Kraken shared a meal. Since they sought to exchange words in peace. Interrupted, perhaps, only by your mother and father.
I suppose so.
Manon said mildly, pausing her eating. The crone's mouth twitched toward a smile, despite the battle, the draining night.
I was your father's grandmother, she clarified at last. I myself bore your grandfather, who made it a Crokin queen before she died giving birth to your father.
Another thing they'd inherited from the Fae. Their difficulty conceiving and the deadly nature of childbirth. A way for the three-faced goddess to keep the balance, to avoid flooding the lands with too many immortal children who would devour her resources. Manon scanned the half-ruined camp, though. The crone read her question in her eyes.
Our men dwell at our homes, where they are safe. This camp is an outpost while we conduct our business.
The Krokins had always given birth to more males than the Iron Teeth, and had adopted the Fey habit of selecting mates, if not a true mating bond, then in spirit. She'd always thought it outlandish and strange, unnecessary.
After your mother never returned, your father was asked to couple with another young witch. He was the sole carrier of the Krokin bloodline, you see. And should your mother and you not have survived the birthing, it would end with him. He didn't know what had happened to either of you. If you were alive or dead, didn't even know where to look. So he agreed to do his duty, agreed to help his dying people.
Her great-grandmother smiled sadly.
All who met Tristan loved him.
Tristan. That had been his name. Had her grandmother even known it before she'd killed him?
A young witch was chosen for him especially, but he did not love her. Not with your mother as his true mate, the song of his soul.
Tristan made it work, nonetheless. Rhiannon was the result of that. Manon tensed. If Rhiannon's mother were here. Again, the crone read the question on Manon's face.
She was slaughtered by a yellow-legged sentinel in the river plains of Melisande, years ago.
A flicker of shame went through Manon at the relief that flooded her. To avoid that confrontation, to avoid begging for forgiveness, as she should have done. Dorian set down his spoon. Such a graceful, casual gesture, considering how he'd felled that wyvern. How is it that the Krokin line survived? Legend says they were wiped out. Another sad smile.
You can thank my mother for that. Rhiannon Krokin's youngest daughter gave birth during the siege on the Witch City. With our armies felled and only the city walls to hold back the Iron Teeth legions, and with so many of her children and grandchildren slaughtered and her mates spiked to the city walls, Rhiannon had the heralds announce that it had been a stillbirth, so the Iron Teeth would never know that one Krokin might yet live. That same night, just before Rhiannon began her 3-day battle against the Iron Teeth High Witches, my mother smuggled the baby princess out on her broom.
The crone's throat bobbed.
Rhiannon was her dearest friend, a sister to her. My mother wanted to stay, to fight until the end. Yet she was asked to do this for her people. Our people. Until the day of her death, my mother believed Rhiannon went to hold the gates against the High Witches as a distraction. To get that last Krokin scion out, while the Iron Teeth looked the other way.
Manon didn't entirely know what to say, how to voice what roiled within her.
You will find, Glennis went on, that you have some cousins in this camp.
Asterin stiffened at that, Etta and Briar also tensing where they lingered at the edge of the fire. Manon's own kin, on the Blackbeak side of her heritage. Undoubtedly willing to fight to keep that distinction for themselves.
Bronwyn,
the crone said, gesturing toward the dark-haired coven leader with the gold-bound broom, now monitoring Manon and the 13 from the shadows beyond the fire.
Is also my great-granddaughter, your closest cousin.
No kindness shone on Bronwyn's face, so Manon didn't bother looking pleasant either.
She and Rhiannon were close as sisters,
Glennis murmured. It took a considerable amount of effort not to touch the scrap of red cloak at the end of her braid. Dorian, darkness embrace his soul, cut in.
We found you for a reason.
Glennis again warmed her hands.
I suppose it is to ask us to join in this war.
Manon didn't soften her stare.
It is. You and all the Krokans scattered across the lands.
One of the Krokans in the shadows let out a bark of laughter.
That's rich.
Others chuckled with her. Glennis's blue eyes didn't falter.
We have not rallied a host since before the fall of the Witch City. You might find it a more difficult task than you anticipated.
Dorian asked.
And if their queen summoned them to fight?
Snow crunched under stomping steps. And then Bronwyn was there, her brown eyes blazing.
Don't answer, Glennis.
Such disrespect. Such informality to an elder. Bronwyn leveled her burning stare on Manon.
You are not our queen, despite what your blood might suggest, despite this little skirmish. We do not, and will never, answer to you.
Morath found you just now, Manon said coolly. She had anticipated this reaction.
It will do so again. Whether it is in a few months or a year, they will find you. And then there will be no hope of beating them.
She kept her hands at her sides, resisting the urge to unsheathe her iron claws.
A host of many kingdoms rallies in Terrasen. Join them.
Terrasen didn't come to our aid 500 years ago. Another voice said, coming closer. The pretty brown-haired witch from earlier. Her broom, too, was bound in fine metal, silver to Bronwyn's gold.
I don't see why we should bother helping them now.
I thought you lot were a bunch of self-righteous do-gooders,
Manon crooned.
Surely this would be your sort of thing.
The young witch bristled, but Glennis held up a withered hand. It wasn't enough to stop Bronwyn, though, as the witch looked Manon over and snarled.
You are not our queen. We will never fly with you.
Bronwyn and the younger witch stormed away, the gathered Kraken guards parting to let them pass. Manon found Glennis wincing slightly.
Our family, you will find, has a hot-headed streak.
Ruthless. What Manon had done tonight, leading the Iron Teeth to this camp? Dorian didn't have a word for it other than ruthless. He left Manon and her great-grandmother, the 13, looking on, and went in search of the spider. He found Cyrene where he'd left her, crouched in the shadows of one of the farther tents. She'd returned to her human form, her dark hair tangled, bundled in a Kraken cloak, as if one of them had taken pity on her, not realizing the hunger in Cyrene's eyes wasn't for the goat stew.
Where does the shifting come from?
Dorian asked as he paused before her, a hand on Damaris.
Inside you?
The spider shifter blinked up at him, then stood. Someone had given her a worn brown tunic, pants, and boots, too.
That was a great feat of magic you performed.
She smiled, revealing sharp little teeth.
What a king it might make you. Unchallenged, unrivaled.
Dorian didn't feel like saying he wasn't entirely sure what manner of king he wished to be. Should he live long enough to reclaim his throne? Anyone and anything but his father seemed like a good place to start. Dorian kept his stance relaxed, even as he asked again.
Where does the shifting come from inside you?
Cyrene angled her head, as if listening to something.
It was strange, mortal king, to find that I had a new place within me with the return of magic. To find something new had taken root.
Her small hand drifted to her middle, just above her navel.
A little seed of power. I will the shift, think of what I wish to be. And the change starts within here first. Always the heat comes from here.
The spider settled her stare on him.
If you wish to be something, king with no crown, then be it. That is the secret to shifting. Be what you wish.
He avoided the urge to roll his eyes, though Damaris warmed in his grip. Be what you wish. A thing far easier said than done, especially with the weight of a crown. Dorian put a hand on his stomach, despite the layers of clothes and cloak. Only toned muscle greeted him. Is that what you do to summon the change? First, think of what you want to become?
With limits. I need a clear image within my mind, or else it will not work at all.
So you cannot change into something you have not seen?
I can invent certain traits. Eye color, build, hair. But not the creature itself.
A hideous smile bloomed on her mouth.
Use that lovely magic of yours. Change your pretty eyes,
the spider dared.
Change their color.
Gods damn him, but he tried. He thought of brown eyes. Pictured Kaol's bronze eyes, fierce after one of their sparring sessions. Not how they had been before his friend had sailed to the southern continent. Had Kaol managed to be healed? Had he and Nezrin convinced the Kagan to send aid? How would Kaol even learn where he was, what had happened to all of them, when they'd been scattered to the winds?
You think too much, young king.
Better than too little, he muttered. Damaris warmed again. He could have sworn it had been an amusement. Cyrene chuckled.
Do not think of the eye color so much as demand it.
How did you learn this without instruction?
The power is in me now,
the spider said simply.
I listened to it.
Dorian let a tendril of his magic snake toward the spider. She tensed. But his magic brushed up against her, gentle and inquisitive as a cat. Raw magic, to be shaped as he desired. He willed it toward her, willed it to find that seed of power within her. To learn it.
What are you doing?
The spider breathed, shifting on her feet. His magic wrapped around her, and he could feel it, each hateful, horrible year of existence. Each. His mouth dried out. Bile surged in his throat at the scent his magic detected. He'd never forget that scent, that vileness. He'd bear the mark on his throat forever as proof. Volg. The spider somehow was Volg, and not possessed, but born. He kept his face neutral, uninterested, even as his magic located that glowing, beautiful bit of magic. Stolen magic, as the Volg stole all things, took everything they wanted. His blood became a dull, pounding roar in his ears. Dorian studied her tiny frame, her ordinary face. You've been rather quiet regarding the quest for revenge that sent you hunting across the continent. Cyrene's dark eyes turned to depthless pits.
Oh, I have not forgotten that. Not at all.
Damaris remained warm, waiting. He let his magic wrap soothing hands around the seed of power trapped within the black hell inside the spider. He didn't care to know why and how the Stygian spiders were Volg, how they'd come here, why they'd lingered. They fed off dreams and life and joy, delighted in it. The seed of shape-shifting power flickered in his hands, as if grateful for a kind touch, a human touch. This. His father had allowed these sorts of creatures to grow, to rule. Sorsha had been slaughtered by these things, their cruelty.
I can make a bargain with you, you know,
Cyrene whispered.
When the time comes, I will make sure you are spared.
Damaris went colder than ice. Dorian met her stare, withdrew his magic, and could have sworn that seed of shape-shifting power trapped within her reached for him, tried to beg him not to go. He smiled at the spider. She smiled back. And then he struck. Invisible hands wrapped around her neck and twisted, right as his magic plunged into her navel, into where the stolen seed of human magic resided,
and wrapped around it. He held on, a baby bird in his hands as the spider died. Studied the magic, every facet of it, before it seemed to sigh in relief and fade into the wind, free at last. Cyrene slumped to the ground, eyes unseeing. Half a thought and Dorian had her incinerated. No one came to inquire after the stench that rose from her ashes, the black stain that lingered beneath them. Volg. Perhaps a ticket for him into Morath. And yet he found himself staring at that dark stain on the half-thawed earth. He let go of Damaris, the blade reluctantly quieting. He'd find his way into Morath, once he mastered the shifting. The spider and all her kind could burn in hell. Dorian's heart was still racing when he found himself an hour later lying in a tent not even tall enough to stand in, on one of two bedrolls. Manon entered the tent just as he towed off his boots and hauled the heavy wool blankets over him. They smelled of horses and hay, and might very well have been snatched from a stable, but he didn't care. It was warm and better than nothing. Manon surveyed the tight space, the second bedroll and blanket. 13 is an uneven number, she said by way of explanation. I've always had a tent to myself. Sorry to ruin that for you. She cut him a dryly amused glance before seating herself on the bedroll and unlacing her boots. But her fingers halted as her nostrils flared. Slowly, she looked over her shoulder at him. What did you do? Dorian held her stare. You did what you had to today, he said simply. I did as well. He didn't bother trying to touch Damaris where it lay nearby. She sniffed him again. You killed the spider. No judgment in her face, just raw curiosity. She was a threat, he admitted, and a Volg piece of shit. Wariness now flooded her eyes. She could have killed you. He gave her a half smile. No, she couldn't have. Manon assessed him again, and he withstood it. You have nothing to say about my own choices? My friends are fighting and likely being killed in the north, Dorian said. We don't have the time to spend weeks winning the Krakens over. There it was, the brutal truth. To gain some degree of welcome here, they'd had to cross that line. Perhaps such callous decisions were part of wearing a crown. He'd keep her secret, so long as she wished it hidden. No self-righteous speeches. This is war, he said simply. We're past that sort of thing. And it wouldn't matter, would it, when his eternal soul would be the asking price to staunch so much of the slaughter? He'd already had it wrecked enough. If crossing line after line would spare any others from harm, he'd do it. He didn't know what manner of king that made him. Manon hummed, deeming that an acceptable answer. You know about court intrigue and scheming, she said, deft fingers again flying over the laces and hooks of the boots. How would you play this, as you called it earlier? My situation with the Krakens. Dorian rested a hand under his head. The problem is that they hold all the cards. You need them far more than they need you. The only card you have to play is your heritage, and that they seem to have rejected, even with the skirmish. So how do we make it vital for them? How do you prove that they need their last living queen, the last of the Kraken bloodline? He contemplated it. There is also the prospect of peace between your peoples, but you... He winced. You're no longer recognized as heir. Any bargaining you might have as a Blackbeak would be on behalf of only you and the 13, not the rest of the Iron Teeth. It wouldn't be a true peace treaty. Manon finished with her boots and lay back on her bedroll, sliding the blanket over her as she stared up at the tent's low ceiling. Did they teach you these things in your glass castle? Yes. Before he'd shattered that castle into shards and dust. Manon turned on her side, propping her head with a hand, her white hair spilling from its braid to frame her face.
You can't use that magic of yours to simply compel them, can you?
Dorian huffed a laugh.
Not that I know of. Maeve wormed her way into Prince Rowan's mind to convince him to take a false mate.
I don't even know what Maeve's power is, Dorian said, cringing.
What the Fae Queen had done to Rowan, what she was now doing to the Queen of Terrasen. And I'm not entirely certain I want to start experimenting on potential allies.
Manon sighed through her nose.
My training did not include these things.
He wasn't surprised.
You want my honest opinion?
Her golden eyes pinned him to the spot as she gave a curt nod.
Find the thing they need and use it to your advantage.
What would prompt them to rally behind you, to see you as their Kraken queen?
Fighting in battle tonight won some degree of trust, but not immediate acceptance.
Perhaps Glenys might know.
I'd have to risk asking her.
You don't trust her?
Why should I?
She's your great-grandmother, and didn't order you executed on sight.
My grandmother didn't until the end either.
No emotion passed over her face, but her fingers dug into her scalp at her words.
So Dorian said,
Aelin needed Captain Rolf and his people shaken out of centuries of hiding in order to rally the Mycenaean fleet. She learned they would only return to Terrasen when a sea dragon reappeared at last, one of their long-lost allies on the waves. So she engineered it to happen. Provoked a small Volg fleet to attack Skull's Bay, while it lay mostly defenseless, and then used the battle to showcase the sea dragon that arrived to aid them, summoned from air and magic.
The Shifter,
Manon said.
Dorian nodded.
And the Mycenaeans bought it?
Absolutely, Dorian drawled.
Aelin learned what the Mycenaeans needed in order to be convinced to join her cause. What sort of thing might the Krokans require to do the same?
Manon lay back onto her bedroll, as graceful as a dancer. She toyed with the end of her braid, the red strip there.
I'll ask Ghislaine in the morning.
I don't think Ghislaine is going to know.
Those gold eyes slid to his. You truly believe I should ask Glenys?
I do. And I think she will help you.
Why bother? He wondered if the 13 could ever see it. That hint of self-loathing that sometimes flickered across her face.
Her mother willingly abandoned her city, her people, her queen, in their last hours so she might preserve the royal bloodline.
Your bloodline. I think she told you that story tonight so you might realize she will do the same as well.
Why not say it outright then?
Because in case you didn't notice, you're not exactly a popular person in this camp, despite your ploy with the iron teeth.
Glenys knows how to play the game.
You just need to catch up with her.
Find out why they're even here, then plan your next move.
Her mouth tightened, then relaxed.
Your tutors taught you well, princeling. Being raised by a demon-infested tyrant did have its benefits, it seems.
His words rang flat, even as an edge sharpened inside him. Her gaze drifted to his throat, to the pale line across it.
He could almost feel her stare like a phantom touch.
You still hate him?
He arched an eyebrow.
Am I not supposed to?
Her moon-white hair gleamed in the dim light.
You told me he was human. Deep down, he'd remained human and tried to protect you as best he could.
Yet you hate him.
You'll forgive me if I find his methods of protecting me to be unpalatable.
But it was the demon. Not the man who killed your healer.
Dorian clenched his jaw.
It makes no difference.
Doesn't it? Manon frowned. Most can barely withstand a few months of Volg infestation. You barely withstood it.
He tried not to flinch at the blunt words.
Yet he held on for decades.
He held her stare.
If you're trying to cast my father as some sort of noble hero, you're wasting your breath.
He debated ending it there, but he asked,
if someone told you that your grandmother was secretly good, That she hadn't wanted to murder your parents and so many others, that she'd been forced to make you kill your own sister. Would you find it so easy to believe? To forgive her?
Manon glanced down at her abdomen, at the scar hidden beneath her leathers.
He braced himself for the answer, but she only said,
I'm tired of talking.
Good. So was he.
Is there something you'd rather do instead,
witchling?
His voice turned rough, and he knew she could hear his heartbeat as it began hammering. Her only answer was to slide over him, strands of her hair falling around them in a curtain.
I said I don't want to talk. She breathed, and lowered her mouth to his neck, dragged her teeth over it, right through that white line where the collar had been.
Dorian groaned softly and shifted his hips, grinding himself into her. Her breath became jagged in answer, and he ran a hand down her side.
Shut me up, then,
he said, a hand drifting southward to cup her backside, as she nipped at his neck, his jaw.
No hint of those iron teeth, but the promise of them lingered, an exquisite sword over his head. Only with her did he not need to explain. Only with her did he not need to be a king, or anything but what he was. Only with her would there be no judgment for what he'd done, who he'd failed, what he might still have to do. Just this, pleasure and utter oblivion.
Manon's hand drifted to his belt buckle, and Dorian reached for hers. And neither spoke for some time after that. The release she found that night, twice, couldn't entirely dull the edge when morning broke, gray and bleak, and Manon approached Glenys's larger tent. She'd left the king sleeping, bundled in the blankets they'd shared, though she hadn't allowed him to hold her. She'd simply turned onto her side, putting her back to him, and closed her eyes. He hadn't seemed to care, sated and drowsy after she'd ridden him until they'd both found their pleasure, and had been quickly asleep. Had stayed asleep, while Manon had contemplated how exactly she was to have this meeting. Perhaps she should have brought Dorian. He certainly knew how to play these games, to think like a king. He'd killed that spider like a blue-blooded witch, though. Not an ounce of mercy. It shouldn't have thrilled her the way it did. But Manon knew her pride would never recover, and she'd never again be able to call herself a witch if she let him do this task for her. So Manon shouldered through Glenys's tent flaps without announcing herself. I need to speak to you. She found Glenys buckling on her glamored cloak before a tiny bronze mirror.
Prior to breakfast? I suppose you got that urgency from your father. Tristan was always rushing into my tent with his various pressing matters. I could barely convince him to sit still long enough to eat.
Manon discarded the kernel of information. Iron Teeth didn't have fathers, only their mothers and mothers' mothers. It had always been that way, even if it was an effort to keep her questions about him at bay. How he'd met Lothian Blackbeak, what had prompted them to set aside their ancient hatred.
What would it take to win the Krakens over, to join us in war?
Glenys adjusted her cape in the mirror.
Only a Kraken queen may ignite the flame of war, to summon every witch from her hearth.
Manon blinked at the frank answer.
The flame of war?
Glenys jerked her chin toward the tent flaps, to the fire pit beyond.
Every Kraken family has a hearth that moves with them to each camp or home we make. The fires never extinguish. The flame in my hearth dates back to the Kraken city itself, when Bran and Galathinius gave Rhiannon a spark of eternally burning fire. My mother carried it with her in a glass globe, hidden in her cloak, when she smuggled out your ancestor, and it has continued to burn at every royal Kraken hearth since then.
What about when magic disappeared for 10 years?
Our seers had a vision that it would vanish, and the flame would die. So we ignited several ordinary fires from that magic flame and kept them burning,
When magic disappeared, the flame indeed winked out. And when magic returned this spring, the flame again kindled. Right in the hearth where we had last seen it. Her great-grandmother turned toward her.
When a Kraken queen summons her people to war, a flame is taken from the royal hearth and passed to each hearth, one camp and village to the other. The arrival of the flame is a summons that only a true Kraken queen may make.
So I only need to use the flame in that pit out there, and the army will come to me? A caw of laughter.
No. You must first be accepted as queen to do that.
Manon ground her teeth. And how might I achieve that?
That's not for me to figure out, is it?
It took all her self-restraint to keep from unsheathing her iron nails and prowling through the tent. Why are you here? Why this camp? Glennis's brows rose.
Didn't I tell you yesterday?
Manon tapped a foot on the ground. The witch noted the impatience and chuckled.
We were on our way to Ilwe.
Manon started. Ilwe? If you think to run from this war, I can tell you that it's found that kingdom as well. Long had Ilwe borne the brunt of Otterlin's wrath. In her endless meetings with Erewhon, he'd been particularly focused on ensuring the kingdom stayed fractured. Glennis nodded.
We know. But we received word from our southern hearths that a threat had arisen. We journey to meet with some of the Ilwe warbands who have managed to survive this long, to take on whatever horror Morath might have sent.
To go south, not north to Terrasen. Erewhon might be unleashing his horrors in Ilwe just to divide you, Manon said, to keep you from aiding Terrasen. He'll have guessed I'm trying to gather the Krakens. Ilwe is already lost. Come with us